Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world development. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yis Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
the Republic of Congo held election Sunday cut off from the world. Hours before the vote, the government of the Central African nation called on phone and internet carrier to shut down service for 48 hours.
That's Emily Ayub reporting from Abidjan. Details coming up.
Also, officials in Somalia say Al-Shabaab militants have attacked a Somali government military base, killing at least six soldiers. And Benin's prime minister has conceded defeat in the country's presidential election, saying businessman Patrice Talon has won a decisive victory.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, officials in Somalia say Al-Shabaab militants have attacked a government military base, reportedly killing at least six soldiers. Authorities say the insurgents attacked the base in La Anta Burr, 40 kilometers south of Mogadishu today. Several military vehicles reportedly were seized in the assault. The French news agency quotes a local resident as saying hundreds of Al-Shabaab fighters overran the base. Al-Shabaab claims it inflicted heavy casualties and destroyed the base. Somali military officials admit there was heavy fighting, but say they cannot elaborate on casualty figures. They also deny the base was destroyed, saying troops repelled the attack.
The International Criminal Court has ruled that former Congolese vice president and rebel leader Jean-Pierre Bemba is guilty of war crimes and crimes against humanity during operations in the Central African Republic. Bemba is the first ICC defendant to be convicted of rape as a war crime and crimes against humanity. From Nairobi, Jill Craig has more.
Marking the final chapter of a trial ongoing since November 2010, the International Criminal Court issued a guilty verdict Monday against former Congolese vice president and rebel leader Jean-Pierre Bemba Gombo.
In light of the evidence analyzed as a whole, the chamber found beyond reasonable doubt that Mr. Bemba is criminally responsible under Article 28A for the crimes against humanity of murder and rape, and the war crimes of murder, rape, and pillaging committed in the territory of the Central African Republic by the MLC forces in the course of 2002-2003 operations.
Bemba is the most senior political leader to face judgment at the ICC, and the first convicted of rape as a war crime and crime against humanity. Mariana Lapena is a legal officer with the Open Society Justice Initiative.
It's the second case that looks over sexual violence, but it's the first conviction. So in a way, it's becoming real.
Bemba was found guilty for failing to control his troops. Senior researcher Aaron Mata at the Hague Institute for Global Justice says the verdict is significant.
It's kind of historical in that sense because it's the first commander being tried and found guilty of command responsibility, and particularly from the fact that he failed to take action in order to stop the crimes from being committed.
ICC prosecutor Fetu Bensouda responded Monday that those in command or authority in control positions have legal obligations over troops even when they are sent to a foreign country. Lapena says she hopes the verdict will deter other would-be offenders.
I think it's a very important message to commanders of different capacities that may be overseeing troops that are committing crimes, that they could be held accountable for the crimes committed by their troops if they don't act appropriately to prevent the crimes or repress the crimes.
Bemba now waits to be sentenced after spending almost 8 years in detention. He and four associates face a second ICC trial in which they are accused of witness tampering in relation to his war crimes trial. 53-year-old Bemba is a former rebel leader in the north of the Democratic Republic of Congo. He sent troops from his Movement for the Liberation of Congo into the Central African Republic in October 2002 to help put down an attempted coup by Francois Bozizé against then-president and rival Ange-Félix Patassé. Bozizé took control of the Central African Republic before he was ousted in 2013. Following his involvement in the CAR, Bemba took a position as one of four vice presidents in DRC President Joseph Kabila's transitional government. After losing a presidential bid in 2006 to Kabila, Bemba fled in 2007 to Europe, where he was arrested in 2008. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Benin's prime minister has conceded defeat in the country's presidential election, saying businessman Patrice Talon has won a decisive victory. Benin's electoral commission has yet to announce final results, but Prime Minister Lionel Zinsou said that provisional results show Talon with a significant lead. If the results are confirmed, Talon will take over from President Thomas Boni Yayi, who was stepping down after two terms. Meanwhile, in Senegal, the French news agency reports that partial results in yesterday's constitutional referendum show that so far a majority of voters favor reforms. However, voter turnout was only 40%. The reforms backed by the president would limit a president's term to 5 years, down from the current seven. But Senegal's constitutional court recently ruled that the reforms would not affect the current term of President Macky Sall. The opposition had wanted it to take effect immediately. Final official results are expected by Friday.
Vote counting is underway in the Republic of Congo, but information is scarce. That's because the government has blocked all phone and internet use in the country. President Denis Sassou Nguesso is widely expected to win another term in office. Amelia Ayoub has more from Abidjan.
The Republic of Congo held elections Sunday, cut off from the world. Hours before the vote, the government of the Central African nation called on phone and internet carrier to shut down service for 48 hours. Amnesty International denounces the move.
Shutting down the communication networks is unjustified and it's an attack on media freedom. Authorities must really ensure that everyone is able to carry out its work without fear, without harassment.
Despite the ban, the coordinator for Congo's opposition coalition was able to send out tweets Monday and retweeted a video of people reading election results outside a polling station. Online communications were blocked last year during protests against a constitutional referendum to change presidential age and term limits. That referendum, which passed with 92% of vote, allowed Denis Sassou Nguesso to run again after 32 years in power. Uganda employed a similar blackout strategy during polls last month, blocking social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook as votes were cast and tallied, though people used VPN access to get around the ban. Official results showed another of Africa's long-term president, Yoweri Museveni, winning another term. The Congo government says the current blackout is to prevent illegal announcement of election results. The main opposition coalition had created its own structure to tally the votes, claiming that the official electoral commission was biased in favor of the president. Reuters news agency reports that late Sunday, police fired tear gas at a couple of hundred opposition supporters assembled outside a polling station in the capital. Amnesty's Alegosi warns that this type of response will only inflame an already tense situation.
So the use of force must be avoided, and any use of force, excessive force, should be impartially investigated.
The African Union sent observers to Brazzaville for Sunday's vote, but the European Union did not, saying the condition for a free and fair election had not been met. Emily Yaub for VOA News in Abidjan.
Just days after the European Union and Turkey reached a deal on limiting the flow of migrants and refugees to Europe, Greece says the plan may be in jeopardy. AP reports that Greece's prime minister warns that for the plan to succeed, human smugglers off the Turkish coast must be stopped. Turkey also has some complaints. Turkey's president is unhappy that European countries are criticizing Turkey's record on human rights and media freedom. The agreement between the EU and Turkey was reached on Friday and was supposed to take effect yesterday, but AP says details are still being worked out. The agreement calls for Greece to send new arrivals back to Turkey. In exchange, the EU will settle more refugees that are now in Turkey and provide more financial aid to Ankara. More than 2.5 million refugees, mostly Syrian, are in Turkey. Meanwhile, it's estimated there are 50,000 refugees stranded in Greece. And despite the new deal, there's been slowdown in arrivals.
This evening, we begin our special series about migrants and refugees on the Greek island of Lesbos, those fleeing to Europe from the Middle East, South Asia, and North Africa. Pose daunting humanitarian challenges. NGOs and the United Nations are providing aid, but volunteers often fill in the gaps. In the first part in his series, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with volunteers at the Better Days for Moria camp on the Greek island of Lesbos. He asked them about their experiences helping the new arrivals.
Did you just arrive?
I'm hungry.
You have water? Yes.
It's the middle of the night on Lesbos, and Alyssa Pemberton, a 28-year-old American volunteer, is talking with a family of Syrian migrants. They've just arrived at the Better Days for Moria compound and are trying to determine where the group should go first, to the kitchen tent for some hot food or to the clothing distribution tent for dry clothes.
One minute?
Yeah, come.
Pemberton often works in the clothing tent, where volunteers hurriedly sort through piled boxes of donated articles. They're looking for garments the migrants need after a trek of hundreds of kilometers and a dangerous sea crossing from Turkey, often on flimsy and overcrowded boats. She says discussions with migrants can become strained when the clothes they want are different than what's readily available.
A common phrase we have to say is no shopping, because they want certain things. We show them one thing, and they want skinny jeans. They don't want the sweatpants, and we try to tell them the sweatpants are good for you, they're warm. And I get frustrated, and I'm flustered, and I just try to tell them to take them. But then I have to remember that some of these people don't have another change of clothes. That's what they're going to be wearing for maybe a month. And who knows what they're going to get at the next place. Maybe they don't have this great clothing distribution to offer them. And so I need to remember that when I'm trying to find something for someone and just take that extra second and dig a little bit more and find something that they might like.
Pemberton also works to find tents and sleeping bags. These may be in short supply, especially for single men. She admits that all the rush and sorrow take a personal toll on her.
Yeah, every day is a roller coaster of emotion, and I'd say there's been moments in every single night where I want to quit and I want to be done, and it's too stressful and it's too overwhelming. I feel so bad that I can't find people places to sleep, and I hate all the pressure being on me. I've had nights where it's only me trying to find people places to sleep, and that's been really hard, just not being able to ask someone else, like, hey, do you know where we can put these 10 men? And then there's the little moments in the night, my favorite moments of bringing someone to their tent and walking around with them and asking them where they're from and hearing their story.
Last night, Alyssa met a teenage migrant who was looking for her girlfriend. The two had been placed in a tent with two male strangers. Alyssa found them their own tent, then noticed they were cold.
So I brought them down the clothing distribution. I got them a pink hat and a purple hat and some gloves, some nice boots. And one of the girls said it was her birthday, so I went and got this little a backpack, because they asked for a backpack too, and this little matching pouch, and then put some suckers and some a little sewing kit that I'd saw. So I put that in there, a couple of toothbrushes, and then I wrote happy birthday from Alyssa with a heart. And then the next day, they see me around camp, and Alyssa, how are you? Thank you for the blanket. That's what keeps me staying, and I love those little times.
Shah is a petite volunteer with a big job. Born in Iran, raised in London, she translates for Iranian migrants. She acts as their advocate to Greek police and EU registration officials who can grant them 30-day temporary visas. The visas will enable them to stay in Europe and apply for refugee status and asylum. Shah says her work is complex, hands-on, and often satisfying.
I mean, right now I can tell you that I'm really, really happy because I've managed to give milk to a lot of children that needed it because we had the volunteers, we had the permission. I managed to give them tea and biscuits while They were waiting for hours at the registration lines. The fingerprinting area was not working. It had broken down. So I managed to really help people. There is a massive gap that I'm filling. So this makes me happy. And of course, throughout the day, there is a lot of things going on. People have a lot of issues. Everyone's sick. Everyone has children. You can't help everyone, and you just have to accept that.
Natasha from Athens is using her vacation to volunteer as a roving clown. She says that silly physical humor is a welcome relief for children and parents alike, whatever their language or culture. Less than a century ago, untold thousands of Greeks were refugees from Asia Minor.
It's knowing that this can happen to you and just showing solidarity to your brothers and sisters in the world, because we are all brothers and sisters. For me, there is no distinction between nationalities or borders. You are my brother, she's my sister, we are all human beings. We are supposed to help each other when in need. Volunteering is not charity for me, it's solidarity. It's looking at your fellow human being, seeing them as an equal.
Dutch volunteer Joram Westland builds infrastructure and helps with cleanup. He says he empathizes with the migrants, but never pities them. He admires their optimism, given their tremendous challenges.
When I walk around camp in the morning, when I do my morning rounds, and I see the new people arriving and checking out where they need to go and what they need to do, and really friendly and helpful. I had refugees coming in the morning, putting on dry clothing and immediately starting helping me when I was picking up the garbage, just full of energy and faith. That makes it hard for me to see the optimism now. Like, we made it across the sea, we're in Europe now, not realizing what kind of journey is still ahead.
The journey ahead holds some perils for volunteers. Beside the potential burnout from their work, officials often threaten to shut down facilities like Better Days for Moria in the hope that official aid groups and governments will pick up the slack. Adam Phillips, VOA News, on Lesbos, Greece.
We will have part two of Adam Phillips' series on migrants and refugees tomorrow on African News Tonight.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiyas Wuhib, 22 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Officials in Somalia say Al-Shabaab militants have attacked a Somali government military base, killing at least six soldiers. And Benin's prime minister has conceded defeat in the country's presidential election. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Tunisian security forces say they killed a suspected terrorist today in heavy fighting at the border town of Ben Guardain. It's the same town where suspected Islamic State fighters launched a deadly attack earlier this month. The French news agency quotes a hospital official as saying 10 members of the security forces and one civilian were wounded in today's fighting. Tunisia is scheduled to host a meeting tomorrow for countries that border Libya. Islamic State is expanding its operations in Libya and has launched attacks on neighboring countries. Here in the U.S., a circus tradition that's been a major attraction for well over a century is coming to an end for the Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus. The circus has announced it is retiring its elephant acts for good, beginning in May. Pressure from legislation prohibiting certain elephant training methods and other restrictions led the circus to make the decision. Stephen Payne is vice president of corporate communications for Feld Entertainment, the parent company of Ringling Brothers. He spoke with me about the removal of the elephants from the circus and what lies ahead for both the circus and the majestic elephants.
It was a long time coming, and it really was a bittersweet decision. But we looked around at the legislative landscape, and we've been seeing a lot of unnecessary anti-circus bills pass in cities. And it really became problematic for us to be able to move the circus from one city to another with such varying degrees of regulation. We are, after all, an entertainment company. We're not usually in the business of fighting City Hall. So we decided, rather than take the resources, time, the money that we've been investing in fighting all of these ordinances, to transition the elephants to the Ringling Brothers Center for Elephant Conservation and really make them a greater investment in their care and conservation there.
Some of the animal rights groups claim that elephants and other animals are mistreated when they're in captivity and in such shows as circuses. What do you say to this?
Well, we're very, very proud of our animal care. We recognize we are the number one advocates of animal welfare. We are not advocates of animal rights. People who come to see a Ringling Brothers performance will see animals who receive 24-hour care 7 days a week from a dedicated team of men and women who put the needs of the animals really before their own. So anyone who comes to one of our shows will see animals that are thriving in our care.
Some of those who do attend circuses and take their children to them, they're expressing disappointment with this. So what alternatives will you all be offering to people?
Again, this only applies to elephants. There's still going to be tigers, camels, horses, a variety of other animals in the circus. And the producers of Ringling Brothers are looking at some rather dramatic changes for a new edition of the circus that's coming out this summer. No, I can't tell you what they are just yet. But the circus has survived for 145 years because it adapts. It changes with the times.
What do you think will happen with the other wild animals that you all have in the circus down the road looking ahead?
I can't predict the future. We just plan on keeping them in the show and continuing to provide the best care for them. People have come to see animals at Ringling Brothers for generations. We hope to still be able to provide that for generations to come.
The sanctuary that is for the elephants in Florida, can you tell us about it and what the elephants will be experiencing once they get there?
Well, the Ringling Brothers Center for Elephant Conservation is a 200-acre facility. It's not open to the public. It's dedicated to the study, conservation, and care of the endangered Asian elephant. It was founded in 1995 because our chairman and CEO, Kenneth Feld, recognized that if Ringling Brothers didn't do something to conserve the species for future generations, they could very well go extinct in North America. Really, the 11 elephants who are currently on the circus will be moving there at the beginning of May, and they'll join the rest of the herd, which is the largest in North America, and they'll continue to be elephants. They'll have plenty of pastures to roam in, sand, and other toys to play with. We'll get daily baths, veterinary care, plenty of food. Basically, everyone retires to Florida.
Do you think this will have a financial impact on the Ringling Brothers Circus?
No, I don't, positive or negative. The center is not, obviously, a money-making endeavor, and each elephant costs about $65,000 per year per elephant, whether or not they ever performed in the circus or not. So I don't think that this is really going to have an overall impact on the company as a whole.
You mentioned earlier how the circus continues to evolve and change with the times. How do you see the circus in the months ahead or even in the years ahead?
Well, I mean, technology is going to continue to play a large role. If you look back at circuses that I went to when I was a kid in the 70s versus the technology that's employed today, it is dramatically different. Again, the audiences are different too. I mean, when you think back in the early years, the circus was over 3.5 to 4 hours long. Now it's 2 hours long and no act is generally longer than 6 or 7 minutes. So the speed and pacing and everything will always change. I think what we want to do as a company and what the producers are keeping their eye towards is making sure that the circus stays contemporary for a modern audience, but still brings together a lot of the traditions that people come to expect in a Ringling Brothers performance.
That was Stephen Payne, Vice President of Corporate Communications for Feld Entertainment, the parent company of Ringling Brothers Circus. He spoke with me from New York City.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Coming up next is the Sunny Side of Sports at 1830 UTC. And on behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Greg Burns, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
next time on Straight Talk Africa. We will discuss the Benin presidential election. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.